You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. And yet again, the voice that you're hearing is obviously not Troy Olsen. It's me, Jeff Hura, this week. I'll be hosting, and I'm here, as always, with the incomparable Michael Engel. We got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. How you doing, Mike?
I'm pretty good there. I will warn you, there is a little bit of wind out this way. So
there is some wind. I should have mentioned that in the get-go. We all know what kind of problems wind has with this show.
And the internet. Wind is terrible for the internet.
Wind and the internet, they don't mix. I don't know if you guys know that, but...
It's like oil and water.
It's exactly like oil and water. It just does not mix. So now we're sitting here. We're kind of in the full part of spring training here. A little bit of... I don't know if you'd call it the lull, probably, but the games have started and the novelty has kind of worn off a little bit. It's into that kind of everyday grind and... You're starting to, you know, the main starters and the main players are starting to get a little bit more time. I saw, I think Jason Vargas pitched four innings today, and you see people like James Shields getting a little bit more time. So that's kind of cool. But for the most part, it's kind of just getting into that got to make it through part of spring training. But the first major thing that's kind of happened is you kind of have these waves of cuts in spring training, and usually not necessarily cuts, but kind of waves of paring down the spring training roster, whether it is cuts or sending people to, Omaha or Northwest Arkansas or extended spring training, or, you know, I guess do all the minor leagues, do they all camp together?
I think they pretty much do. I mean, I haven't been down there, so I haven't been able to see the backfields and all that. But, you know, generally they'll phrase it as, you know, so-and-so was sent to minor league camp.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think it's pretty much the same group. They might mix and match in some cases, at least from like the full season guys and the rookie league guys, and kind of go from there.
Yeah.
But I don't think they hold too strictly to particular levels, especially when in some cases they're trying to determine, you know, what levels some of those guys are going to be assigned to if they're not, you know, outright optioned to one or the other, you know, guys who aren't on the 40-man roster, for instance.
Exactly. So yeah, that's kind of interesting how they do that. But yeah, so some players will get sent away to that, and the Royals actually had their first big wave and sent quite a few. They cut, quote unquote, 14 players from their roster. And I think actually now that I look at it, that in that 14, looking at the list here, the name of the number of the players sent to minor league camp are Jason Adam, Aaron Brooks, Sugar Ray Merriman, Kyle Zimmer, Juan Graterol, Brandon Laird, Jorge Bonifacio, Gorkys Hernandez, Melky Mesa, and Paulo Orlando, as well as you had John Lamb, Chesler Cuthbert, and Lane Adams were optioned to AA, Northwest Arkansas. See, that's why I kind of wasn't exactly sure, because you talk about being minor league camp. So then when they say that they've been optioned to Class A or Class AA, Northwest Arkansas, is that then that they're gone from spring training now, or they're just like, 'cause that's what kind of throws me off when they term it like that.
It's just those are guys that are on the 40-man roster, and so that's why they're starting to use their option years. So it just puts them into those, you know, that level. I don't know how they determine necessarily, you know, what level they're going to go to at this stage. I mean, it could just be that for the purpose of, you know, minor league games for that kind of level. Yeah, it might just be they, you know, they just want to have it like that. Because, I mean, it's not like you couldn't just switch them a level pretty simply.
Doesn't eat up any options to switch between minor league levels or anything like that. So,
right.
Man, baseball. Like, the I mean, I consider myself pretty knowledgeable, but there's still just like there's so many little nuances to every part of not only just the game of baseball, but running an organization. It's crazy. Just like, you know, who to send down, who to send to minor league camp, whether you option them, all that kind of stuff. And
there's a lot of jargon.
Yeah. And I figure off the top of my head, I'm not even sure. Are there like, because you have in football, you know, you have cut down days, right? So you start with 90 players and you have to cut down to 72 and then you have to cut down to 65 and then to 53 eventually. off the top of my head, I don't think, are there any rules like that in baseball? Like, obviously you have the 40 man, which you have to be to, by opening day. And then obviously the 25 man roster that actually plays, but, is there any sort of cut down day limitations like throughout spring training? I can't think of if there are.
Not that I recall seeing. I mean, there very well might be, but it's so obscure that you just don't run into it the same way that you might in the NFL, you know, where it's that very determined date. What you'll also see sometimes if the Royals have like a split squad game, sometimes they'll still bring some of those guys up because they're still in the same facility, and especially in Arizona where everybody's so close, you know, you're 20 minutes from just about any stadium no matter where you are in that area. So it's not like, you know, if they send John Lamb over this way, well, I mean, they could still use him if they know that they need, right, you know, another arm. And you'll see that. They might have a guy who comes in to be a defensive replacement to spare a couple of innings or something. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty fluid up until the point where you really have to start setting your major league rosters, and then, you know, everything else kind of follows from there.
Yeah, and for those who, you know, aren't exactly familiar, and, you know, I'm not super expert on how spring training really works, especially because I've never been out there. But from my understanding, how it usually works is the reason they do these things where they send to minor league camp, they basically, you know, they'll have a group of players who, you know, in this case, the Jason Adams of the world, the Kyle Zimmers, John Lambs, Chester Cuthberts, who they can tell at this point, you're not going to be on the major league roster, and there's a good chance you probably won't be all year, you know. So at that point then, you know, whereas your major league spring training is probably more about, you know, getting back into the swing of things, refining your skills, getting used to playing together, you know, turning double plays with the right people and things like that. You know, minor league camp, I got to think, is a little bit more instructional, a little bit more trying to develop, you know, their spring training. You obviously want to work on some things, but, you know, I don't think they're sitting there saying, okay, Hosmer, we've got to completely overhaul your swing. You know, at this point it should be refining, maybe kind of tweaking some things here and there that similar to how you might be able to do in midseason, but this time you don't have to worry about doing it in games. But whereas so taking these groups of players and sending them down to minor league camp gives them a chance to be a little bit more instructional, work on some things and maybe a different capacity that they wouldn't be able to in the major league camp. And I mean, just looking at this name, it's pretty, and usually I think how these go are pretty much what you would expect. I don't think that I see any name that really surprises me as, oh man, I thought they were going to be able to, you know, was maybe start, you know, had a chance of making the team or whatever. You know, it was mostly, I guess the biggest name that sticks out is obviously Kyle Zimmer, because I think people talk about a lot him possibly impacting this team and this year, I mean. And he, you know, according to this article in the Star, he still hasn't thrown off a mound yet. And so that is kind of maybe a little bit of a surprise, because if you want him to come up in that July, August range, even if it's in a bullpen role, I mean, the fact that he hasn't even thrown off a mound yet is, you know, maybe it's a little bit concerning. I know they're kind of taking it really slow with him because they really want to be careful, because they think he has a bright future, and rightfully so. But, I mean, I'm curious, was there, whether it's with Zimmer or anybody else, Mike, was there anything that kind of jumped out at you as, oh, that was a surprising move, or was it all just kind of par for the course?
Well, the thing with a team like the Royals is, at least this year, is that they, you know, after an 86-win season, they went out, they had a couple of holes, and they pretty much have filled them. at least, you know, to the extent of they have a major league player there. So there's not a lot of battles left in camp. I mean, it looks like, you know your starting lineup as long as everybody's going to stay healthy through spring training. You know that there's going to be a backup catcher. It's probably Brett Hayes. They seem really intent on keeping Jerod Dyson and Justin Maxwell, and Maxwell's hitting pretty well. He's playing pretty well this spring. He was 3-for-5 in a spring training game today. And that pretty much leaves one spot, you know, out of position players for people to, you know, to fight for. So there's not a lot of guys that, you know, they're not going to have a 10-man competition for that. They've got basically three, maybe four, you know, Danny Valencia, Christian Colon, Pedro Siriaco, and maybe Jason Donald for that last spot. And then the only real kind of deal that you're looking at on the pitching side is the fifth starter spot, where it's pretty much worked down to Yordano Ventura and Danny Duffy. And so that doesn't leave a lot of spots for some of these guys to do much. And once you get past the first week, you're really looking at getting, you know, James Shields stretched out. He pitched 5 innings the other day. You said Jason Vargas pitched 4 innings today. And, you know, little by little, they're going to try to get these guys out to where they're throwing maybe 6 innings and get them to a point where they're going to be ready once the season starts to go out and throw 6, 7, God willing, 8 innings right away at the start of the year. And so that also leaves a lot of work that's just not available for some of these guys. So someone like Chris Dwyer, who was sent to AAA, who Ned Yost really kind of sees as a potential starter if there's an injury or any kind of other issues, you know, he just wouldn't have enough innings to really get himself stretched out to where he can do 5 or 6 innings. So he has to go to the minor league camp to do that. And kind of the same deal with some of the other guys. You know, Jason Adam, they get a look at him. John Lamb, they get kind of a look at him. You know, some of these other guys, they, you know, just a little bit to see how they do against, you know, competition and guys, you know, on other teams that are fighting for spots. And now you're kind of getting to that point where, you know, you're trying to balance keeping players from being exposed to potential injury, but also getting them their work. And so, you know, today's a good example of that. The Royals put out, you know, about half of their starting lineup out there today, but Alcides Escobar, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, I think they all played in a B game, which was just on the other side of the complex, which basically is they just throw them in any batting lineup and just let them go out and hit. And basically they can get 6, 7 at bats that way. And it's not really a real game. It's just kind of out there so that they can get their timing. And, you know, then it gives the other guys an opportunity to go play a little bit on in the actual, I guess, official spring training game, which still doesn't mean anything. So there's not really a lot of surprises. I kind of thought they might want to look at John Lamb a little bit more, but he also got hit pretty hard in his last appearance. Dwyer really didn't have a great outing on his last one either. So, you know, a lot of these guys, I don't know who you might see. Kyle Zimmer might, if, you know, they can get him up to speed pretty quickly. John Lamb might have some role to play this year on the big league team. Dwyer kind of sounds like he's one of those guys who, if there's an injury, he might be one of the first or second guys up. Kind of depending on how the Duffy Ventura thing shakes out. So, you know, not a lot of guys you're going to see doing a lot of impact this year unless a lot of things happen. Either they play out of their minds in the minors or, you know, there are injuries.
Yeah, and so on top of all these shifting around of the players, they did actually make some cuts. One of which, maybe the most notable, if you want to call this notable, is something we talked about previously, Brad Penny getting released. That was, I mean, I think we knew from the start what that was, which was a just kind of a lottery ticket. You know, you get it, and the Powerball comes up. You didn't get any of the numbers, so you toss it aside, and, you know, better luck next time. Good luck to you. I mean, I don't think any of that was altogether surprising. Did you?
And he didn't pitch very well either. So it was just a matter of, I think he gave up more hits than he did, than he got outs, which is never a good way to make any kind, especially when you're coming off of, you know, some injuries, a year off due to injury, you're already in your mid thirties. So he was kind of behind it. He was going to have to pitch his pitch lights out through all of spring training to really even have a shot. And so the Royals, from what I read, is they just informed him that he wasn't going to be making the club. And I guess it came down to he wanted the option to go find someone who might sign him and give him a shot. So, you know, that's, you know, more power to him. There was also something about he punched a wall or something. I don't know about that. It, you know, it's just reports. I don't think that was too much of it. I think it was just a matter of he was getting hit. He gave up 13 hits. He only got 12 outs. So that's pretty difficult to do, especially when you're really only looking at one starting spot that's available, and guys like Duffy and Ventura are pitching well.
Yeah, so not spending too much time on that, but it's worth noting. And you mentioned how John Lamb, who, I mean, you want to talk about some ups and downs that – it's funny, just as a kind of an aside, I saw Jeff Rosen, the sports editor for the Kansas City Star, on Twitter, talked about all the quote-unquote ups and downs that Luke Hochaver had in his career. And I actually questioned him on Twitter. I was like, ups and downs? I mean, seems like Luke Hochaver's career has been pretty consistently on the downside, you know, until last year. And he's like, well, it was the number one pick. I'm like, okay, so let's consider that an up.
That was 2006, so.
And then he falls straight down, and he hangs down there for, you know, consistently getting worse. I think he got worse every year except for one of his 5 years as a starter. And then last year he was pretty good, or 4 years as a starter. And then last year he was really good as a reliever, so that was another up. But point being, you talked about John Lamb getting hit around pretty hard. I mean, that guy has had about as many ups and downs in his short career as you can imagine. I mean, he came on, got into, I believe it was a car accident that hurt him in his junior year of high school and hampered his senior season.
I don't think he even pitched his senior season.
Yeah, so it would have been a first-round pick. And then the Royals took a gamble on him, and was it the fifth round?
Fifth round, and they gave him a pretty good bonus for it, too. Yeah,
to keep him from going to college. And then he came in, and he looked like he had recovered from the injury, and everything was going great. Top 20 prospect in all of baseball in 11. And then blows out that arm, Tommy John surgery, comes back, hurts his ankle. I mean, the guy, he's had just some up and down. You know, his velocity didn't come back last year, and then now it's back this year, apparently, at least somewhat, and then he gets kind of hit around again. So kind of crazy, the ups and downs he's had in his career. But the another kind of bright prospect that is maybe what John Lamb was a few years ago is Sean Manaea. We all know the story of how the Royals acquired him and kind of his – we talked at length with Jason Parks about him when he was on the show, and Parks was just going nuts over Manaea earlier last week when just – he was pitching off the backfield apparently, and I'm not sure if it was – what kind of a situation, if it was just like one of those B games you're talking about. I can't remember exactly, but he was saying he was sitting 92 to 94 the whole time. He was painting the corners. He had an excellent fastball, great command. He said it seemed to be giving the illusion that he was looking as good now as he was a couple summers ago in the Cape Cod League when he blew everybody away and people were talking about him being the first pick overall. So the fact that he's healthy and pitching at this point is, you know, a number one, the best thing to hear. Just because we know, as we've seen with Kyle Zimmer, you know, it hasn't been necessarily the easiest road for him from a health standpoint. So having him back and healthy and pitching is the number one best thing. And then beyond that, it's just gravy. So the fact that the reports are that good so far, I mean, it's got me, I don't know about you, Mike, but it's got me giddy excited to this point? I mean, how excited does the reports that we've heard so far make you?
Well, I mean, the thing with Minaya, and we talked a little bit about this a month and a half ago or so, you know, it was all about his health. And, you know, clearly the Royals are very comfortable with where he is health-wise. You know, he's thrown off the mound a few times now. You know, and as you said, Jason Parks had a pretty glowing review. The way he described it when he submitted it was that it read like pure smut, which it really kind of, it's very which, true.
Because if you don't read Jason Parks very much, that's a compliment.
Yeah. 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 When he gets pornographic with Jason Parks, that's a good thing. You know, great fastball with a lot of deception. I think they called it a ghost fastball is the way he phrased it, because you just don't realize it's coming. Good changeup, slider, you know, is going to be effective, and he's got command of these things. So if he stays healthy, yeah, that's really exciting. Plus, the Royals have said in a couple of different times that they want him in a full season league. It's probably going to be Wilmington. And, you know, that puts him in position to possibly be in Double-A by the end of the year. And, you know, who knows? If he just blows up and goes crazy, he might even beat Kyle Zimmer to the big leagues. You know, if he does well. I mean, he's a guy out of college, so it's not unheard of for those guys to jump really quickly.
And if he's pitching like the reports are assuming, and he's kind of, you know, that dominant, I mean, his numbers in Wilmington are going to be absurd.
That's kind of like, I think we talked a bit about Miguel Almonte possibly going to Double-A to start the year, and I kind of want to see him in Wilmington in High A just to see what those numbers end up looking like, just because that really is, it's probably one of the harder parks to hit in all of professional baseball. And, you know, it's a bad environment. It's a big park. I haven't been there because it's Wilmington and that's very far away, but from the looks of it, it's got that batter's eye, and it's not like the field of vision for the batter is not very good. So you've got a lot of problems there if you're trying to hit. And then when you throw a guy who, you know, has a deceptive fastball, good changeup, and can spot it, well, yeah, I mean, that's going to be, I mean, just like Jason Parks has described it, it's just going to be dirty. And I just want to see what it looks like. A lot of times, you know, we talked in the past about the wall at Double-A, because a lot of times those pitchers will come out of Wilmington and they do very well, and then they hit Double-A, and that's where it stops, because they're completely different environments. And it's A, tough to adjust to that, and B, you know, maybe it shows a little bit more of who they are as a true pitcher. Maybe, you know, there's some deception in those numbers. So that's another thing, I guess, to keep an eye on, you know, through the season. And with Minaya, if he does make that kind of jump, and pretty much any pitcher that kind of goes from Wilmington to Northwest Arkansas, just to kind of see what differences they are. Because if you can pitch in Northwest Arkansas, you're probably going to be able to pitch in the big leagues to some degree of success.
Yeah, because, I mean, don't be shocked if the reports are true. And, I mean, he could have something where he's got 50 innings with in Wilmington. This is Minaya. I mean, with like a 0.9 ERA or just something ridiculous. And then, you know, then that's always the question, you know, don't, you know, obviously if you're going to have an ERA like below 2, I don't care what league or what kind of park you're in, that is fantastic. But all the same, you know, be cognizant of the fact that, you know, that's going to jump. It's like you've said, and we've talked about that wall at Double-A, every pitcher has seen it. Even, you know, someone like the most recent example of someone who's succeeded even at Double-A, Jordano Ventura, still saw a pretty big kick in his ERA and just all his numbers in general going from Wilmington to Northwest Arkansas. So, yeah, like you said, we have talked at length, and I have been, you know, maybe the most outspoken about the Royals and their just awful track record with pitching and pitching development. I wrote that big article a couple of years ago. Has it been that long? Year and a half, probably.
Yeah.
And talked to Alan Yeager. We've had him on the show. We've had lots of people talk about pitching and pitching development, specifically with the Royals. And it's pretty much all been in a negative light. But now we're sitting in a position where I know 3 years ago, and around exactly this time, it was best farm system ever. The Royals had five pitchers in the Baseball America's top 100 list. And, you know, to this day, the only one that's pitched in the major leagues is Duffy. Actually, did Dwyer have a cup of coffee in the majors last year? I can't remember.
He did. He had a handful of outings. Yeah,
not too many innings. But yeah. So technically, two from that list have pitched in the majors. But, I guess Jake Odorizzi has two, but not for the Royals. So we won't count that.
He made two starts, but yeah, I mean, they were the last two, last week of the season.
Did he start for the Royals?
Yeah, there were two four-inning starts against.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I must have already moved on. And
yeah, it was right in 2012.
That's right. That would have been 2012.
Yeah,
right?
And they were goofing around with the timing of it because they had him pitch against Cleveland because Yost was like, we don't want to throw a rookie against Detroit and have our rookie starter influence the playoffs because, you know, the Royals were out of it. And I was like, that's weird, but whatever. It's your team, I guess. So
yeah,
what you want to do.
So I forgot about that. So okay, so three pitchers, but the only one that's really done anything meaningful for the Royals has been Danny Duffy, and calling that meaningful only in the volume aspect, right? Because to this point in his career, Danny Duffy's numbers are nothing to write home about. So that has been a huge negative and basically a black eye on what has otherwise been I won't call it a turnaround, but, you know, a reclamation project for Dayton Moore, you know, with what he's been able to do, you know, bringing in all the talent, acquiring some other talent, Salvador Perez, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, you know, all those that, you know, the being able to help Alex Gordon and Billy Butler, you know, continue to take those next steps, but no pitchers has been the thing. But now we're sitting in a position where you've got Danny Duffy and Yordano Ventura, who one of those two is going to start the season as the number five pitcher. Odds on favorite is Yordano Ventura. There's been some slight talk of Danny Duffy in the bullpen, but I doubt that's the case. I think they want to keep him as a starter, which is the right decision. So they'll probably put him down to AAA. And then he's the first guy up if there's some problems, which there's going to be. Some pitcher, not necessarily going to blow out their arm, but some pitcher's going to have to miss a few starts. And first guy up is probably going to be Duffy. And then we just talked about Manaea, and he could move quick. I mean, if he's in Northwest Arkansas by June, I mean, and if he blows away people in there for a month and a half, who knows? Maybe he's even in AAA by the end of the year. I mean, it's not unheard of for a college pitcher to move through the system that fast. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to say Sean Manaea is David Price, but David Price didn't spend more than a year in the minors. So, you know, it's not unprecedented that somebody can move that quickly. And then you've got Kyle Zimmer, who was in AA last year. He's going to be in AA this year, I believe, probably. Or are they going to start him at AAA, actually?
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do with him. It could just be see how he gets through and then go from there.
Yeah. Well, regardless, I mean, I think the overwhelming opinion is that Kyle Zimmer will likely be ready at some point this year, towards the end of the year, but could be a key cog in a playoff push. So the whole point being, we've got this four pitchers, Manaea, Zimmer, Ventura, Duffy, they all feel much closer than that group in 2011, which obviously Duffy was a part of as well. But I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head how many of those pitchers in that group actually had pitched above high A even at that point. I mean, I think Montgomery was the only pitcher that had double A experience in that list.
It was Montgomery had some. Duffy, that was the year he was gone for most of, or at least the first half, and he came back in double A.
Okay.
I think Dwyer, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Dwyer, I believe, pitched a little bit, and Lamb might have made, like, I think he pitched in the playoffs for them, but he was mostly a low A, high A guy.
Yeah, so
but
I mean,
he jumped, you know, he was in three different levels that year.
You know,
and then Odorizzi was in Wilmington, I think. Or no, not in 2011. Wait, no, what? Yeah.
No, because
my timing right, because that would have been, yeah, Odorizzi would have been in Wilmington because that was just after that.
Yeah, but and when that list came out, I mean, he had just been acquired a couple months before, so he hadn't even pitched in the Royals system yet.
Right.
So, so I mean, that, you know, even if having all those with some double A experience, I mean, you're still looking at none of those pitchers above double A, whereas this time you've got, and those were all, let me think, yeah, all high school arms. You know, now you've got Zimmer, who's probably going to start in AAA. Yordano Ventura has pitched in AAA. Duffy has pitched a full season in the majors. And you've got Manaea, who they said is probably going to start in high A, and he's coming from college. So, I mean, how do you feel about this whole situation? Because it's, I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, to be honest with you. it's nice to, this feels a little bit more realistic than it did a few years ago that these pitchers are going to pan out.
Well, I think a lot of that hinges on Ventura because, you know, like you said before, he's a guy who went through double A and was excellent. I mean, he had his high, he struck out almost 12 batters per nine innings last season in double A. And, you know, he was pretty much every start, there was not really a problem. The only thing that he ran into was working on his pitch counts. And then he went to Omaha. He still had success. Came to the big leagues, he made a couple of starts and looked good there. And right now, through a couple of appearances in spring training, he's pitched pretty well too. So that's extremely encouraging. You know, Jason Parks had a report on him as well that he's, you know, before he'd expressed some skepticism, and really the only thing that he's skeptical now of is the health and being able to log the innings. It's not any question about the stuff. You know, he's got the fastball that everybody knows about, but the changeup plays off of that very well. And then he's got a really good curveball too. So that's three pitches. All of them can be above average. A couple of those can be, you know, very, very good. So that's the biggest encouraging thing, is that you actually have a guy like that who can be somebody who can jump in. And I would bet he's probably going to get that fifth starter spot. I don't think you can expect anybody from Bruce Chen, Jeremy Guthrie, and Jason Vargas to all stay healthy and make all their starts. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Danny Duffy make about 20 starts at the very least this year through some combination of filling in for those guys, either long-term, short-term, whatever. And, you know, he's had a rougher spring. He's given up a few homers. The caveat is that it's in Arizona. So, you know, how much can you really pay attention to that? They say he's still working on the slider, feels good about it. It seems, just from, you know, all these games are radio and game day and whatnot, but it seems like he's got a little bit better control about things. So that's encouraging to see that. And then you've got the other guys, as long as, you know, Zimmer and Manaea are able to be healthy. I mean, those are two, you know, frontline arms. You know, if all of those guys, Ventura, Manaea, Zimmer, if they're number two level starters, you know, you're sitting pretty good. You know, you don't necessarily need the quote unquote ace if you've got three guys like that who are above average, and then Duffy can be even average and you're doing okay. But he still has upside. And so then, you know, it's just whoever fills in that fifth spot. And if that's Jason Adam, eventually, that's not a bad place to be. Of course, with this group, you kind of have to also, you know, Jason Vargas has a 4-year deal. Jeremy Guthrie's got a couple more years. So Bruce Chen has he's got at least the option. So, you know, I don't know if they're all going to be in the same rotation until maybe 2016, but I think you'll see some of them. You know, Ventura, definitely. Duffy, definitely. They're going to be starting some this year. Zimmer and Manaea next year. Either of them might be able to make some bullpen appearances too. So, you know, they're definitely a lot closer than what the other group was, which, like you said, they, you know, most of them hadn't really been in the upper levels yet. And these guys have already shown, or at least three out of the four have shown success in the upper minors. And, you know, the reports on Minaya suggest that he could have a lot of success as well.
And then take into that, you want to talk about 2016. Well, you know, somebody that we didn't really hit on, Miguel Almonte.
Yeah.
I mean,
he might be the best of all of them.
Yeah, and he's starting, and like we talked about, they're going to skip him a level, which I haven't seen the Royals do in a long time. So, or they're talking about it, at least, that they can, that they could put him at Double A and see him succeed. So, I mean, opening day 2016, I mean, you could be looking at the mini Tampa Bay Rays here in Kansas City with a full five-man rotation.
It only took 9.5 years.
But you see, yeah, it took 9.5 years, no big deal, right? But, I mean, it probably won't happen because they're still going to have Vargas under contract. And let's see, Guthrie would not be, because next year would be his last year. So
yeah, they do have that team option they tacked on when they restructured. But if these guys are doing what they're going to do, they'll probably just buy him out. So
yeah, unless they could option and trade him or something, but they'd probably just buy him out. But anyway, I mean, you know, if they decide to do something with Vargas or whatever, but I mean, theoretically, if they all show that they can get it done, I mean, you could be looking at a, you know, Minaya, Zimmer, Ventura, Duffy, Almonte rotation opening day 2016 with,
I think most of them would be under 25 or something. So
yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Ventura might be 25. Well, Duffy would be definitely a 26 ish, right?
Let's see. What year did you say that was? 2016?
2016.
Let's see. Yeah. So Ventura would be turning 25 that year. Duffy obviously would be the oldest of those, but yeah, the other guys would be younger than that.
So yeah, all 26 and under. And
that's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, and you're looking at guys like Minaya, Zimmer, and Ventura, who all have frontline ability, and Almonte as well. And the only reason I put him, you know, lowest on the list was just because 2016 would technically be his rookie year, so, you know, you wouldn't expect him to kind of blow up. But I mean, you'd have 2016, and you'd have, that could be Ventura's third full year, which would be when, I mean, that's kind of when pitchers really start to explode. And Duffy would have a couple of years, you know, if Zimmer gets up this year and then all of next year, and same with Minaya. I mean, they could all be, you know, where you'd only have one rookie in that rotation even. So, I mean, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves because we've done this before and it has not worked out in our favor.
It's painful, like I said, when it doesn't happen.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm still heartbroken over Mike Montgomery. I'll never get over you.
You'll never forgive the Royals for Mike Montgomery. I'll
never forgive him for that. But, and of course, the larger question being, you know, are the Royals, have they moved on from their old ways that have prevented them from allowing Mike Montgomery's to succeed? I mean, only time will tell. And I mean, we've heard some encouraging news, but then you hear some of that same old type stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, without belaboring this point any further, it's encouraging, but the Royals in no way have earned any benefit of the doubt whatsoever. So we're gonna stay realistic about things, but it's nice to look to that moving forward. And with that, we'll go ahead and take our first break, and you come back, and we've got some more pitcher talk. It seems to be all pitchers these days, but we got some more pitcher talk for the Royals, and then kind of some stuff going around the league. So we will see you on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Reading old love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am not Jeff Herr. I am Troy Olson, and I finally got home today, so I will be taking over the hosting duties from the excellent job
that Jeff Herr. Usurper!
Yeah, right?
I didn't have any three-way calls, so I did okay this time.
Right, right. And for those of you that don't get the three-way call joke, that goes back to our days on 1510 when Kamler booked this three-way call and then decided not to show up for that show. And or somebody else booked it, and either way Jeff got stuck with it, and the producer had told us three-way calls don't work so good in this studio because, you know, we couldn't use the 810 side, and no, it did not work. It was a nightmare.
Still never listened to that show.
Yeah, it was awful. and then I screwed up the live read
because I
was so flustered from everything else, so
it was pretty fantastic.
It wasn't my shining moment, we'll put it that way.
He won't be using it for radio jobs in the future.
No.
But, you know, the guys have talked about a lot already, and the only thing I wanted to add is Sean Manaea is a huge human being. I don't know what his size is.
You've seen him in person. Did you get to see – I forgot that you were – did you get to see Manaea pitch? We were just talking about how Parks was raving about it. I mean, did you see him pitch at all in person?
Well, let me talk about that real quick. So I went to spring training, and we had promised all these interviews, and that didn't happen. Of course, Leske got clubhouse passes, and Clint has the same thing. So you're going to get a lot. And that's why we went together and became one, you know, Royals podcast versus being the quote-unquote competing shows.
One podcast to rule them all.
And pretty much.
All the nerd references tonight. Sorry.
Yeah, we're going to get every one of them in, you know. Something about a lightning bolt will be coming at some point.
By the power of Kaufman, I have the power.
I will say, I love Kaufman, and don't take this any other way than that on the subject of Kaufman. I love Kaufman Stadium. But there is something to be said for a spring training game. Because, so I got there, I went get there really early, but we stayed clear in the southern eastern part of Phoenix, or the Phoenix Metroplex, and Surprise is in the northwestern part, which is four interstates away, and so that's an adventure getting there to begin with, and it's a solid hour and a half drive. So I didn't get there at 10 like I had planned, 10 a.m. Game was at 1. I ended up getting there about 11:30 or so. So they had done a lot, and I had never been. So it was a bucket list thing for me. I had never been, and so I finally got across spring training off my list. So the next time I go, I'll have a better idea of what I want to do. But I got back there, and I kind of saw what he was talking about. And, yeah, I could have ran up and say, hey, can I pull you aside for a minute and talk to you? And I almost did that with Matt Fields because I actually ran into him. And we're going to have him on yet, for those of you that have been wanting that Matt Fields interview for about a year now. We're going to have him on. I talked to him again. He is an awesome dude. Jason Adams successfully hid from me, but gave me tickets to the game the next day. So I didn't run into him. I believe I sat a couple of spots down from Miss Delaware, though, but did not confirm that. But I believe that when we all stood and cheered, it was like me and then my mom and my wife were there, but they didn't really know what I was cheering for. And then the three of them, well, Megan knew because I talk about Jason Adam all the time, so she knows that he plays for the Royals. She's got that much covered. But you go there, and if you get there at 10, you can go to the backfields. And this is a must-do for anybody that goes to spring training. Get there a little early, at least an hour,
and go into the backfield. And you can go to the Rangers or the Royals. The Rangers were out of town, and I didn't – they were out of town. They were across Phoenix. And so their backfields were mostly closed by 11 o'clock when I got there. But the Royals were still all there. So I walked down. The first field I found was Lorenzo Cain hitting with George Brett and help me out, our actual hitting coach.
Pedro.
I never say his last name right.
Pedro Grifol.
Yeah, Pedro Grifol. I always say Grivel. Pedro Grifol. And they were working with – and you could hear – like they were a ways away. Like you're behind it, – it's kind of like a big Little League field. And so you're behind the fence, so you can't, you know, but you can see everything. And I took some pictures and sent them out on Twitter, Instagram. And, but you could hear Brett saying, you know, you're Brett and Grifol saying, you're swinging too flat on the ball. This is where you need to hit it. They're telling Kane exactly what he's doing wrong. And it was almost surreal that you were that close, that you could really hear that. Cause you can't, if you're going to a game in Kansas City, you can't see that part of the game. You can't hear that. You don't know what the players are working on. But apparently there's been some issues with Lorenzo Cain's swing. And so he was down there with a 2-on-1 with him and Brett and Grifol. And I mean, if anytime you get to work with George Brett, I mean, it's gotta be good for your game because he's one of the greatest players of all time. And then, so then there wasn't anything else going on. Then I almost had given up, but I start walking down. Here's all these players that come strolling by me. And I start looking at names as they go by. Cause I'm not real good with the faces, you know, cause I don't look at our minor leaguers pictures. So I'm looking at who they are as they go by. And of course, none of the 40 man guys are there cause they're all already in the stadium in Surprise Stadium. And so I'm walking, running to Matt Fields. Like I said, talked to him for a minute, kept on walking, got up to where I took some more pictures, and this is where Ned and everybody else was. There was apparently the equivalent of kind of a B game going on, but just between the team, they were doing some hitting drills and working on some different things. And so it was really neat because you got to see all that, and you saw all the minor leaguers, and literally they walk past you. You know, it's no big deal. And you can get that with the major leaguers too if you don't go on a day when they're going to play, if you would have went a little earlier than an hour before game time or a couple hours before game time or whatever it was. I got there at 11. I think the game was at 1. So that gives you an idea what spring training is like if you've never been. And it's a must go. But if you go, try to get there early. Now, Dave got clubhouse passes, and that allowed him to go in at like 7 a.m. and get some interviews and stuff. And I think he even wore clothes. He didn't show up in his pajamas. So kudos to him on that. And, but he had some really good interviews. And, you know, when they do, I always try to put the names in front of them. Clint and Dave don't. So then you get to play the game of guess who they're interviewing. And so you listen to the first couple of questions and see if you can figure out who they're talking to. I think I know who they were, because I didn't read the description on the episode because I was listening in my car. So I think I know who they were talking to with every one of them, but maybe one. There was one I wasn't so sure about. But I thought if you haven't heard that show yet, you need to listen because there's something that I wanted to touch on, and that's when he talked to Danny Duffy. Danny made a remark that he has told the team that he would be better in the bullpen. He didn't say it like that, but Lesky asked him if he would be better served to be in the bullpen or as a starter, or does he care? Would he rather go to Omaha, you know, and remain a starter? And he made a remark about that he thinks he would be a really good reliever, and he has told the team as much. So to me, that says I just want to play in the major leagues and I'm okay with going to the bullpen. So why don't you just use me there instead of sending me back to Omaha? So I'm going to be very interested to see how this all breaks out. And Ventura has been pitching in kind of the two spot. I don't foresee that staying that way, but that's been where he's pitching and you take it for what it is. You know, it may not matter, but I think Ventura gets the fifth spot, and I think Danny does indeed come out of the bullpen as a long reliever / lefty specialist, and I think he's going to be deadly out of the bullpen. And again, it's going to be, can he control his head? Because he's got all the talent in the world. And, you know, it's the old great stuff thing with Kyle Davies and Luke Hochhaver. And we've seen what Hochhaver could do out of the bullpen, and that's what we're getting to next. And what a huge loss that is this year. Actually, we can go ahead and go there. You know, Luke Hochhaver out for the year, Tommy John surgery, sign him up, knock him down. Every Royals pitcher gets one. And he had such a great year in the bullpen, something that I had wanted to see for many years now. And finally it happens. It's very successful. Not surprising. Kyle Davies. Davis is going to get his in the bullpen. Davey's still not pitching for the Kansas City Royals any longer. Davis is going to get the bullpen spot. Hopefully he's successful out of the bullpen. You know, there's a lot of talent coming up to take a fifth spot and everything else that's going on. So I think it's really bad that Hochaver's gone. I think it's really sad to see what that means from there. Who knows? Is there really anything to take away from it other than that more than likely more than likely that Luke Hochaver has played his last game for the Kansas City Royals, Mike?
Probably. I mean, when you look at the depth of the Royals system and, you know, guys who can pitch in the bullpen, you know, the Royals, if they were going to lose a guy to an injury, the bullpen's probably the spot where they can weather it the best, because they do have, you know, they have so many arms there that they couldn't fit everybody up all year anyway. Aaron Crow only pitched 48 innings last year. Lewis Coleman was in Omaha half the year. And those are guys who could be, you know, pretty good setup men on just about any team. And the Royals can't even find innings for them. So I think that, you know, with Hochaver, you know, if he was to come back, it'd be a real tough fit, because you've also got guys in the minors like Donnie Joseph. You've got Michael Marriott. If the Royals do decide to put Duffy in the bullpen, that's another bullpen arm. You know, you've still got Tim Collins there, Kelvin Herrera, Greg Holland. You know, that's a lot of arms to get around. And when you're taking on a guy in his 30s who has only really had one successful year and probably would never be able to, you know, come close to that year, I think he'd still be good, but you know, he was a sub-2 ERA, 0.86 whip or something like that guy. I mean, that's a ridiculous number. Those are like Kimbrel numbers. So I really don't know. And plus, you got to look at what the money would be. You know, what would he come back at? You know, would it be like a one-year deal for $2 million? I mean, guy coming off Tommy John surgery, is that an investment you need to make when you've got guys who can make the league minimum and jump out there and do about the same job? So for the Royals, I don't think so. So I would think that he's probably thrown his last pitch for the Royals at this stage, but it could be something that he does want to come back. I mean, it seems like he likes the area and likes the organization. So I wouldn't be surprised. I would just be, I wouldn't be counting on it, on him coming back. That is.
Jeff, did you have anything to add?
No, just that it's kind of funny where we've been. People have brought this up on Twitter, just that with Hochaver, where we've come from, where just he was one of the most hated sports figures in the town, more or less sports hate, I should say. I don't think people really cared. He was a decent enough guy, but yeah, and then now it's actually a loss. I mean, thankfully, the Royals are in our position, like Mike said, where they've got some depth in this organization that someone like Lewis Coleman can come in and give you more or less what Hochaver did. But it's still a loss, you know, because even though somebody can step up, there's still some depth you're losing. So it's just kind of funny that that's where it is. But yeah, I agree with Mike. I don't know that I foresee much more Royals in his future.
Well, last year at this time, people would have cheered a Luke Hochaver injury. Obviously, it's not happening this year. And don't tell me that Kansas City fans wouldn't have cheered an injury. We've been down that road. Just go across the parking lot, guys. But now it leaves Kyle. Yeah, now it leaves Davis to fill in that role. Can we get out of him what we got out of Hochaver, Jeff?
Sorry, was that to me? You broke up there for a second.
Yeah, it was you. So we'll cut that.
Okay, sorry.
That's right. I'll reset it. Here we go.
Okay.
So then that leaves us with Davis to fill that role. He's been officially moved out of the starting rotation competition, and he is going to go to the bullpen. Do we think, as fans or as bloggers, do we think we can get that the Royals will get as much out of Davis that we got out of Hochaver?
You know, I don't personally, I don't know that I see getting from Wade Davis what the Royals got out of Luke Hochaver. I mean, Wade Davis, Luke Hochhaver, he had those moments where even as a starter, you know, when he was on and he was rolling, he was just electric. You know, he had those. He had one game I actually was at in person where he had a 9-inning, 80-pitch, complete game shutout.
Oh, against the Reds or yeah. something?
And then there was another game where he had 13 strikeouts against the Rangers, I think.
And the walks, yeah.
Yeah, and then then that comes with, you know, having games where opening day he gives up 6 runs in the first inning, and then you have the cherry on the Hochhaver Sunday where you get both. You get 6 innings of perfect baseball, and then he balks home a run and gives up 6 more in the inning, which I was at that game in person too. That was surreal.
The game before that one, he'd retired like 30 in a row between 2 starts, and then he had his Luke Hochhaver meltdown inning. Which you're exactly right. It was both sides of the coin. It was just the most ridiculous. It's like weather in Kansas. It's 80 degrees today, and it's supposed to snow tonight. So, Luke Hochhaver.
Because I was there with some friends, and we were sitting out at one of the bars in the back watching in the outfield watching the game. We're like, well, let's move to our seats now. And then we said, oh wait, he's got a no hitter going. We're not going to move yet. And then, like, when inning later, everything went. We're like, okay, well, now we have to move. We got to try something to get him to snap out of this. But point being, you saw those flashes. You know, with Wade Davis, he never really showed those flashes as a starter. And he had, was it 1 or 2 seasons as a reliever for the Rays? And
it was all of 2012.
Yeah, so I mean, and he had a pretty good 2012, but mm-hmm. just as a reliever, but just as from the standpoint of, you know, pitching ability and his quote unquote stuff and all that, I don't see what I saw from Hochhaver. You know, Hochhaver, what always amazed me is, I mean, he could hit, you know, mid 90s pretty easily, and everything looked effortless for Hochhaver. It was so strange that pitching actually looked pretty natural to him, but he was just so awful at it. It was so weird. But that's beside the point. But to answer your question, no, I don't think that Davis is, because I don't know from an ability standpoint that he has what Hochhaver has. I think he has maybe a little bit more craft to his game, but that only goes so far, as we saw last year. So I don't see him having, not that he can't be an option in the bullpen, but I don't see him being what Hochhaver was last year.
I would say that, ahead, yeah, I think he can be pretty good out of the bullpen. I mean, we saw when he was in Tampa that one year after a couple of seasons of you know, iffy starting pitching, he went in there, and I remember right after the James Shields and Will Myers trade, I went through and just looked at his game log and just watched every relief appearance from Wade Davis just to kind of get an idea. And he had pretty good stuff. A lot different stuff than what he was using as a starter, because, you know, 1-2 inning stints, you can do that more often. You know, he was throwing harder. He was hitting, you know, 95, 96. He was throwing a cutter about there, and he was throwing like a hard curveball. So I think he could be okay. In 2012, he threw 70 innings and had a 2.43 ERA, struck out 11 batters per 9 innings. I think that's okay. I mean, it's tough to compare him to what Hochhaver did last year. And I would agree that Hochhaver has more talent than Wade Davis, but I think he can fill in at least and give you what Hochhaver may have been able to give you this year coming out of the bullpen with a little bit of regression, because I think anybody expecting Hochhaver to repeat, you know, what he did last year is going to be difficult. I mean, that's tough to match. It's like Greg Holland. I don't think you can see Greg Holland matching what he did last year either, because, you know, simply it was such a dominant year that it's really difficult to, you know, repeat that, because it's a career year. It's tough to do that more than one time. And, you know, Davis last year when they moved into the bullpen, he pitched in 7 games and he only gave up 1 run, only gave up 3 hits in 10 innings. So I think there is a difference where it's pretty clear that Davis is only going to be a bullpen guy. And so, you know, you've put him in there. Maybe he's not going to be the eighth inning guy. I think that'll still go to Herrera. But I think he's somebody's seventh inning, sixth inning. I think you could easily jump in there and, you know, get a lot of batters out in key situations. So I'm a little more bullish on Davis coming out of the bullpen compared to as a starter, of course. But, you know, I think he can do better than average fairly easily.
Well, and I'm ready to see what we get because, we saw what happened with Hochaver after he got in the pen. And Davis actually has a history of being successful out of the pen. So, you know, what does that all mean? I guess we'll see. But I'm very interested to see what we get out of him. And boy, you brought up Herrera. I can't wait to see all the hate that gets deflected at him now because it's not going to be able to go to
It's already there. Hochaver. It's already showing up. I mean, he gave up one homer in Arizona in spring training. He's otherwise been fine. And people are out there calling him terrible and saying that they have no confidence in him. I mean, what's the guy got to do? He's thrown 250 innings in the minors of, you know, a 2 ERA. He's got two almost elite pitches out of the bullpen. You know, let's pick our battles. I just don't understand how people hate Billy Butler and hate Kelvin Herrera when, you know, guys like Mike Moustakas and, you know, Luke Hochaver, even as a starter, you know, in previous years, were given every single break and every, you know, opportunity. I just don't know. I don't know what to tell those people anymore.
It's so funny that...
Like, do they hate Jamal Charles, too? I don't follow the Chiefs that much, but do they, you know, I don't get it.
It's like a good Chiefs comparison might be like a Nile Davis or something where he showed some pretty good flashes last year but had some fumble issues. So people kind of always brought that up and kind of hated on him a little bit. You know, not nearly as much, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we get razzed on a lot as, you know, bloggers, podcasters, whatever, is kind of taking the fun out of the game or whatever people want to say and being negative. But, you know, then people don't realize we're the ones sitting here trying to trump up Billy Butlers and the Kelvin Herreras of the world while the quote-unquote average Joe fan, your Bob Fesco listener,
your Zip War,
is out there, you know, taking these guys down, saying, I don't trust Kelvin Herrera, he's awful, Billy Butler sucks, he's fat, clogs the bases, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Kelvin Herrera has a 3.11 ERA on 144 major league innings pitched. Like last year, he got the home run bug a little bit, but he's still at a 3.8 ERA, which isn't super great for a reliever, but it's not bad either. It's about an average, but he struck out 11 batters per 9 innings in 58 innings pitched last year. So, I mean, and still had a whip of 1.18, which was, it was actually lower than the year before when he did really well. So, I mean, you know, yeah, he had some big moments where he, you know, should have been better and wasn't. But at the same time, like, it's kind of like you said, like, what do you tell those people? Like, what else, what does a guy have to do besides have an elite talent and show it and not be, I mean, think about some of the relievers these Royals have trotted out in the past, you know, and
not Josh Roop and Jamie Wright, who, well, that's a bad example, but,
you know, and not to, you know, I hate taking that tact of, you know, well, this is okay because it's better than what we had previously, but that's not the case here. The point is that, you know, I don't know where you can look at someone like Kelvin Herrera and say that, you know, that he's just not very good when we've seen what not good looks like, and it doesn't look like Kelvin Herrera. Matter of fact, it's quite the opposite. So yeah, it's strange to me. It's befuddling. Like Billy Butler, I can at least understand a little bit, even though I vehemently disagree with the criticism. You know, his speed is a legitimate hindrance. You know, it's not as big of a problem as people make it out to be, but it's a legitimate complaint. He's not very fast. Matter of fact, he's quite slow. So right. I get that, you know, and even if I don't agree with, you know, people talking about his appearance, I at least can understand that the perception you know, someone like Prince Fielder has to deal with the same thing, I'm sure, or David Ortiz, you know, even though their numbers are a little bit better. But, you know, the perception that the way someone looks affects how they, you know, like, again, I don't agree with it, but I at least see where they're coming from. Kelvin Herrera, you know, from just a perception standpoint, you know, I don't see it. I mean, here's a guy who throws a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. He's got two elite pitches. He's done it consistently. Had a bit of a couple bad spots last year, and all of a sudden people are saying that a guy who could be a major cog in this bullpen shouldn't even be pitching. Like, what? I just don't
care. Yeah. He gave up multiple runs in only 5 appearances last year.
Out of, what, 59?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how many, but yeah, I mean, it was, you know, he had two stints to Omaha, but I mean, still, you're looking at, you know, 50 plus innings out of the guy, so I don't know what to tell him.
Yeah.
Well, I like Kelvin Herrera, and it'll be interesting to see. And I don't know if it's just because our fan base as Royals fans is just so miserable, because it hasn't been good in so long, you know.
That when they see something good and then it's not as good, the wheels are falling off, kind of.
Yeah. And this isn't a shot on Mizzou, but I think when you add in the Mizzou element of our fan base,
that everything is going to be bad.
Right. I mean, you want to talk about a sky is falling fan base. And Mizzou fans, you agree with me, so don't even pretend you don't, right? Because you do.
I think they would classify themselves that way.
Also, important here is I was kind of thinking about this today, because for those that are also football fans, you know, today when we're recording this podcast, is the start of free agency, and Dexter McCluster signed with another team. There were a lot of people like, oh, he's completely replaceable. He's, you know, he wasn't that good. He was overrated, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think there's kind of maybe this happens in every town. I don't know. All I know is Kansas City, but it seems like there's, if you want to call it, an epidemic of just people not liking a player, not because he's actually not good, but because he's not the player they want him to be. You know, like Billy Butler is a great example. Kelvin Herrera, very good examples. Like, you know, Billy Butler coming up, we all heard, oh, they've got this young kid who's a big power hitter. He's going to come up. He's going to hit all these home runs. And, you know, he is a power hitter. He's just not the home run flashy, you know, Giancarlo Stanton power hitter. He's just more of a doubles guy, which he's proven to be in his career. But, you know, the perception was he was going to hit all these home runs, and now he hasn't. And so people aren't mad that he's not good, because the numbers clearly show that he is. They're just mad because he's not who they wanted him to be. You know, and same deal goes with Kelvin Herrera. He came up, and his first season, he was really good. He was going to be the closer of the future. And he turns out to be, you know, last year he was more of a 7th, 8th inning guy, and not as reliable as a closer should be last year. And so, you know, well, he's not the guy that we want him to be, so he's just bad. You know, it doesn't necessarily work like that. Just because a player isn't who you necessarily thought they were going to be or want them to be, doesn't mean they're a bad player.
Yep. Alex Gordon had a lot of the same things too before, you know, 2010.
I said to trade him before 2011. I wanted Alex Gordon out of here.
Yeah.
Who would ever thought that he was going to become the player he is now? Before we go that direction, I wanted to make a comparison. I think Jeff made the remark about Nile Davis, who looks like he's going to be a great running back, but he's not Jamaal Charles good. And I think sometimes people get upset with Herrera because he's not Greg Holland good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and there's a phrase, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good.
Right, and I think that's exactly where we are now, is that he's very good. And I just don't think people realize that he is not, you know, this mess of, you know, he's not Kyle Farnsworth, who actually is a halfway decent closer, but he's better than Farnsworth, you know. And I think that's where people get lost, is you got to realize this guy would close on probably 10 or 15 teams in Major League Baseball. He would close opening day for 10 to 15 teams in Major League Baseball. Actually, the Royals are in a situation where they don't need Kelvin Herrera to close, and that says a lot about our team, that we are better than a Kelvin Herrera closer. And I think that that's what we really need to grab onto when it comes to some of these guys. Because Donnie Joseph, he's had control issues. You know, Danny Duffy's going to have issues. But these guys are better than a lot of the guys that we've thrown out there the last 5 years. So it's going to be really interesting to see what he becomes. Before we go, something Royals adjacent, I want to stay on one more thing from spring training. We had Lane Adams on when he was named to the 40 man. We had Jason talk about him before that, Jason Adam. And I asked Jason how fast Lane was, and he said a 9.5 because he didn't want to make Lane mad. And I believe Lane said he was, or he said a 9, and then Lane said he was a 9.5. I can confirm Lane Adams is a 9.5 when it comes to speed. It was so funny to watch him and Dyson in the outfield together because they're both so fast. But Lane, every ball that hit, Lane's running to it. Lane caught a ball in center field. He was playing, what was it? I guess he was playing in left because he's playing for Gordon. So he takes off on the hit, and he catches the ball right in front of Dyson in center field. And I just laughed because that's supposed to be the other way around. You know, Dyson's supposed to be running down those balls, and Lane just made it look easy. And if this guy's got a bat at all, Jerod Dyson is entirely expendable. And I'm not totally unsure that that is exactly what the Royals are looking for in spring training. And I would not be shocked if Jerod Dyson gets dealt, which I think will send ripples through Royals Twitter and Royals Facebook. I think there'll be a lot of really upset people about that.
Maybe.
I want to see Lane's bat, which looked good. And he's got a great eye. He walked a couple of times.
Yeah, he had the two at-bats that I saw, I've only seen a couple of games on TV. But, this is at work. I was able to have it, in another window. And just kind of peek at it between tasks. And, whenever I knew Lane Adams was coming up, I wanted to see him because I haven't seen him. So, he worked a couple of good at-bats. He worked, I think he was 1-2, worked at full and ended up getting the walk and then walked in his next appearance. So,
and he scored. And he scored because he put himself in a position. Mike actually gave me a hard time because I was so focused on Lane, I had missed a run scoring. Which right. is totally true. But I was, one of the things that I was scouting that day was I wanted to see who is Lane Adams. Is he Joey Gathright? Is he Jerod Dyson? Is he better than that? Because once I saw him in the outfield, I was like, okay, I want to see this guy at the plate. I want to know what he can do. Because if this guy can get on with a good OBP, he's dangerous. And that's just another weapon in the gun that the Royals had actually pretty much given up on at one point. If you look at his progression, he wasn't major league material. We've talked about him on this show.
Yeah, he was kind of stuck in the middle minors.
Yeah, and all of a sudden he goes from single A to double A to triple A. It looks like he's going to start in Omaha this year. And, he's on the 40 man. He is a Jerod Dyson, Lorenzo Cain. Well, I shouldn't say that because it depends on what they do with Maxwell. But he's an outfield injury away from a shot at the big leagues. And if he gets up there, I'm not sure he goes back down because he's really good from what I saw. And again, I only saw him in two games, so small sample size. But dude's fast, really fast. And he's big. He's a big guy compared to Dyson.
I don't think a big guy compared to Dyson.
Right.
That's true, but can you swing a bat and run really fast?
No.
I can swing a bat, just not well.
Yeah. Okay, well, he's got both of those on you, so that's yeah. the difference there. And again, it's like Mike said, maybe I'm tripod biased, but I would have loved to see Bubba Starling. I didn't see him anywhere out there, but I would have loved to see Bubba Starling while I was down there. But that's not just because I'm a Royals fan, but that's because I'm a Kansas City fan. I'm a Husker fan, and he was almost all of those things, So.
Nebraska starting quarterback looks like. That's what you want to see.
Yeah, I do. I want to see what next year's. Yeah, exactly. I want to see what next year's Husker starting quarterback looks like, because guys, he could go after this year if things don't work out for him. But he looked a lot better in the second half last year, and that's a whole another show. But Lane Adams, keep an eye on him. Guy can play baseball. I did get to see Jason pitch an inning, and it was very exciting. He looked really, really good. He faced major league talent. I don't remember the three batters he faced, but he just boom, boom, boom. He just looked good. And he was cut and sent to double A, which I think you guys talked about earlier. And so that's going to be where he's going to start. And that's where he needs to be. And I'm going to try to get him on next week, just to touch base on spring training and everything that's gone on in his life this year with both him and his girlfriend and going through, getting into the major league for him and watching her become Miss Delaware and potentially Miss USA. So I think that will be interesting to see as a baseball player, how much does that take away from your normal day by day, your practice when you have to, when you have somebody else you have to support that's doing something as major as what you're doing? I mean, that's the major league of beauty pageants if there ever was one. So, I mean, that's the World Series of beauty pageants for most considerations. So it'll definitely be something to follow for him as well on how, if that becomes a distraction for him as she gets closer to the Miss USA pageant.
Be a distraction for me.
And you know, and she honestly looks a lot different in person. Like if she was recognizable, if, cause I'm pretty, like I said, I'm pretty sure that was her. She was recognizable, but she wasn't as perfect as you would expect a beauty pageant contestant to be.
Yeah. They're pageant. I mean, it's pageantry, pageants, you know, all that stuff. So,
and I don't want to get taken the wrong way, but because she's definitely a very, very beautiful woman, but I was just kind of surprised because she almost had a girl next door thing to her. And most of her pictures, she's, you know, she's so done up and everything. She looks like a beauty contestant, but sitting there in the ballpark, she looked like she belonged in the ballpark watching a baseball game. And so I was kind of surprised, but then again, she's a baseball player's girlfriend. So I guess I shouldn't really be surprised either. So
it's a rough life that Jason Adams living.
Yeah, you know, it goes back to a comment. I don't know if you made it on this show or if you just made it to us privately, but Mike made a comment about if he ever has a boy, he's going to have a bat in hand and ball in hand from the get-go. Yeah. Because if you look at baseball player girlfriends and wives, they definitely do okay. So, I mean, look at Brad Penny. He's what, almost 40, and he's getting – isn't she a beauty pageant contestant too?
We're not going down this road again, are we?
No, because we got ourselves in trouble last time. So.
Well, he's not on the team now, so we can talk about him some more. But
yeah, well, he wouldn't return my tweets either to come on the show. So wow. We were never fans. Irvin Santana looked like he was signed with the Blue Jays for 14. And he fired. I think this is official. Quote me. You can tell me if this is wrong, but it was reported he was looking to change away from the agent that has the coolest name of all agents and being Stringfellow, but. Last I knew, he was still with Bean, but I don't know if this is true or not, but it was seen that he was signing a 1-year deal for $14 million with the Blue Jays. And then that wasn't true. And then today it was all the talk was the Braves are taking a really good look at him because they're short one, cause Medlin got hurt. And Jeff, where are we at with Irvin Santana? I mean, he's not going to be a Royal, it looks like, but is he still unemployed?
I mean, as far as I know, and I think that I saw some, I mean, there's always been kind of whispers that the Orioles were kind of on the outer edge of this as well. And I think that still is true. So, you know, I'm not sure where he's going to end up. I mean, I think, though, it's pretty clear they're getting to the point. Things have kind of shaken out with spring training. It's going to happen. I don't, you know, ask me a week ago, I probably would have said, you know, I think this is going until June. He's going to hold out until there's no longer a draft pick involved. But I think a team's going to get desperate enough. They're either going to see what they have and not like it, or somebody's going to be hurt, like you said Medlin was with the Braves or something, and somebody's going to pop on this. And I think it's, you know, I'm not sure who it's going to be at this point, but it'll be nice because then we can just put it to bed and the Royals will get that compensatory pick.
And Mike, before you add to this, I did want to say the person that's really upset about all this right now is Scott Boras, because he had a plan. He was going to take his two guys and then Santana was going to come along for the ride and they were going to go past the draft day and they were going to break the system and get their guys paid in midseason. And now, you know, if Irvin Santana signs, does that make Boras still look good with his idea, or are his players looking at him going, we'd like to get paid in the next 3 months, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the other two guys are Steven Drew and Kendrys Morales, who, you know, Morales is okay. Drew's all right. So I don't know. I think the draft pick tied to those guys is, you know, along with their kind of talent level and deficiencies, that's another thing that they're fighting against. Santana is coming off his career year. I think people are probably a little skeptical, and plus they have the draft pick, so I don't know. But I do, yeah, I mean, Atlanta coming in, Baltimore still being interested, Toronto being interested and nearly signing him. Santana's going to sign before spring training is over. The Royals are going to get their pick. Just to clear it up, he did fire Bean String Fellow, which is an awesome name. But it's such a weird soap opera term. I mean, we've talked about him every single week because it's always been, are they going to sign him? Can the Royals sign him? Have they talked to him? Oh, they did talk to him. Oh, this happened. That happened. Okay, now it's every week. Oh, he wants to sit out. Oh, he wants $100 million. It's crazy. But the way it worked out was I get the agency was pro forma, which was I can't think of the agent now off the top of my head. But Bean String Fellow and J.L. Liu. Yeah, the guy who tweets all the time. They were all, you know, all three of them all into the same roof. And then Santana fired Bean String Fellow. I just want to say his name again, frankly. And then J.L. Liu left Proforma, and now he represents Santana independent of that agency is how
that's
I understand
just weird
it.
What a soap opera.
I know, right? Someone should make a radio
Alu
clip
was the one
that.
Making all the headaches with
he probably manages it or something. I just don't know the dynamic of the agency. But yeah, I mean it's crazy, but I think at this point, yeah, with three potential suitors, the Braves, you know, they've got not just Medlin, but Brandon Beachy is another guy who's had, you know, some injuries pop up, you know, it was consecutive days that they had two starters get hurt. You know, I think that puts them in play possibly too. So it's definitely, I think we're out of the woods as far as the holdout idea. So that'll get the Royals their compensation pick, which is, you know, that's, I think that's a good thing. And if it's the Braves, it moves them up even one more spot. So that'd be great.
So we'll see. But I think that's all we need to say on Irvin Santana. It just looks like he's not going to be a Royal. And J. Liu went off on Twitter a couple different times. You can go to Royals Review and several other places and find these about how the problem is David Glass. And God, I hope that's not true, because if it is, it puts the whole thing back from where we thought the Royals were going as a team and an ownership. And it really sets them back to the owner that everybody thinks we have instead of the owner that we hoped we had the last that Mellinger has wrote about, how if the team would have been sold, you know, 5 years ago, the owner we have now, you would think is a good owner because he's done the right thing all along. You know, it spent money within reason for a small to mid market team and everything that they've had to do. But now if this is true about him blocking the Irvin Santana thing, you know, again, we don't have his reasons why. You know, I'm a little cautious with signing Irvin Santana, especially to a long-term deal, because he's older. He's had flashes of good. He's also had flashes of bad. I don't know who he is as a pitcher. And I am concerned about Irvin Santana, but if he does sign somewhere a 1 year, 14 mil, then that kind of bums me out, because I think he would have been worth that in Kansas City for another year. It's a viable risk for 1 year, because that's essentially what he was.
That was the qualifying offer.
Yeah. Well, and 14 million was qualifying offer. So they were already prepared to pay that. Didn't expect him to take it. And it just makes it so that you're kind of seeing baseball come to their senses, because yes, there was some huge contracts that were given out, but once free agency started, all the contracts seemed more quote unquote normal to where you would expect baseball contracts to be. Yeah. They weren't insane like Dodger contracts, because Dodgers don't play baseball. They play Dodger.
They play, you know, Monopoly.
It's them, the Angels, the Yankees and the Red Sox. They're playing their own game, you know, and then it's everybody else from there. And the Rangers are at that point too, but they're not quite as insane yet. So, but I mean, Nelson Cruz took $9 million. He's kicking himself for not taking the 14 mil and staying in Texas, where he'll be a heck of a lot better hitter than he's going to be in Baltimore, I think. But I could be wrong on that. And
Baltimore's not bad, but it's not as good as Texas for a hitter.
And if Irving Santana goes to Toronto, oh boy.
Yeah. Like the thing for me on Santana is like, I think he would have been fine with the Royals. I don't think he would have repeated last year, but I think he would have been better than average. I think he'd certainly be better than Jason Vargas. You know, the stadium, the defense behind him, I think those are all good things for him. You put him in Baltimore, put him in Toronto, that's not good, because he's been home run prone just about every other year. One thing I did want to say, and I just, this is just like my kind of thinking devil's advocate kind of thing. If you think about the Royals, they know that they had Santana. They know that he was going to turn down the qualifying offer. There were injury questions, at least as far as some data. Jeff Zimmerman at Royals Review had some good stuff right after the Royals traded for him that kind of put up some red flags. So I wonder if the Royals, having him all year, having their trainers look at him all year, knowing probably better than anybody what his recent medical thing is, you know, if maybe they see something down the line that they did not want to get involved in. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just my own speculation. But, you know, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, maybe there's a reason why they really were not aggressive at all in pursuing him.
But see, that goes back to, goes towards giving the Royals the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah, which they do not deserve.
They haven't earned. So I kind of had a brief conversation on Twitter with David Leske about this today where, like, if the Royals, Troy, before you got here, Mike and I talked about the Royals possibly having an entirely homegrown staff of their own pitchers in 2016. Well, you know, similar to this, if the Royals succeed in spite of themselves, then the success only goes so far. You know, it's if you succeed for the wrong reasons, you know, like if they looked at Irvin Santana and they made that determination that he wasn't worth it because possible injuries and all this kind of stuff, then absolutely good for them. But, you know, my feeling is more or less that they thought the $100 million contract and all that, they couldn't afford him. So they moved on, and then they just literally said, we can't afford it. So, I mean, we'll offer him $8 million, and if he takes it, he takes it. If, or, you know, the qualifying offer, obviously, they've got. But, you know, their real practical offer of a multi-year contract was probably close to what they gave to Vargas. And they'll say, hey, you know, this is on the – either take the qualifying offer or take this contract, or you can test the market. And so he's kind of doing what he wants. And to a point earlier about possibly – Troy, you were saying about, you know, people talking about David Glass and issues. I think that's more of an agent creation than anything that actually happened with Glass. Because I believe the comment on Twitter from his agent was, oh, David, you know, Irvin Santana would be a Royal if Glass wanted him to be. It's like, well, okay, sure. So would Robbie Cano, you know? I mean, like, you can make that comment.
Yeah, he continued to say that Dayton, and he listed a whole bunch of people on how that essentially he had something done with Dayton, and the feeling, that's the way I took the article, and maybe I'm taking it wrong, but the feeling that I took it from was that he had a deal done with Dayton, and Glass said no. And like you said, this could all be the agent pulling the wool, but I mean, like you said, why do they deserve the benefit of the doubt? Yeah, he's been a great owner the last few – well, he's been a good owner the last few years, but what's to say he couldn't slide back into being the owner that we all remember, you know? And so that's the only problem for me on all that. So, but it's all hogwash, and it doesn't really matter now because, you know, the Royals aren't going to sign him. It's just not going to happen. And it's cool that they have a homegrown staff that's good in 2016. That would be fantastic. That would be great news. That would be the best thing that could ever happen to the Royals. I mean, that could make them a really legitimate team. That's what the Cardinals do, you guys. I mean, a lot of people hate to compare us to the Cardinals or whatever, but the reason the Cardinals are so good, and it's pretty expensive to go to a Cardinals game, and it will be that way in Kansas City too if Kansas City gets good. And they don't even have to be as good as the Cardinals because lowered expectations. But the Cardinals are good because they spend some money and have great training, which the Royals don't have. And they utilize their minor league system perfectly and create a bunch of homegrown talent. And then they just use free agency to bring in a Matt Holliday to be the ninth guy that they needed, not to bat ninth necessarily, but to be that ninth guy because they had the other eight figured out. They had pitching figured out. They needed one more guy to be a playoff contender, and that was Matt Holliday in their mind. So they went out and signed him. I use that option, that example, because Matt Holliday was my favorite player until he went to St. Louis.
To further that point, Troy, sorry to interrupt, but you know, and I've heard from, for example, I heard a story about a 24th round draft pick I believe, from the Cardinals, who, you know, was unheralded when he was drafted, came in, but then from year one to year two made a huge leap. And, you know, the person who I heard this story from said, you know, like, how did this happen? How did you, you know, make such big strides from year one to year two? And he said, you know, the Cardinals came to me and they made a specific training program and worked with me individually to get better, you know, and tailored it to his strengths and his suits as a pitcher. So, I mean, you know, here you are with a 24th round pick in the low minors, you know, that's worth nothing, you know, whatever they're worth, you know, minor league players. And the Cardinals are spending that kind of time and resources to try and develop this player. And, you know, I obviously I'm not at every stage of the Royals minor league organization every day, but I've talked to an awful lot of people who have knowledge of how things work. And that kind of thing is not happening in the Royals organization. So just to further your point about training and development for an organization like the Cardinals, you know, that's a firsthand example of the kinds of things that the Cardinals are doing that the Royals are not, that you have players that the Cardinals just pull them out of nowhere and have players that can give meaningful minor or major league playing time.
But in the same, couldn't you say the same thing about Jerod Dyson, 50th round pick, major part of the team now?
Well, it's not to say that the Royals have never had a late round pick that succeeded, but the point is that, again, it's back to, you know, it's the process first results oriented. Do the Royals get credit for Jerod Dyson, or does Jerod Dyson get credit for Jerod Dyson? You know, I mean, every once in a while, a player is going to be so good or have such a unique skill set that they're going to be able to overcome those hurdles. But did the Royals really go and work with Jerod Dyson and say, we want you to be this player on our squad, so we're going to work with you from day one to be that player and make those strides? Or did Jerod Dyson just happen to be born with this ungodly speed that is a gift, and the Royals just said, okay, well, we have to utilize this, you know? So, I mean, I think that's where the difference comes in. You know, there's, I mean, Greg Holland was a 10th round pick, you know, Lewis, or maybe not Greg Holland, but Lewis Coleman, you know, I mean, they've had later round picks that have succeeded, but I think it's ultimately a question of, you know, did those players succeed because of the Royals, or do they succeed in spite of the Royals?
Well, and I'm just going to close out with this. You were right. Good job. Greg Holland, 10th round pick, 2007 amateur draft, 5'10", 180 pounds of pure awesome. That's what it says right on Wikipedia.
Indeed. Okay, pure awesome and filth. Yeah,
I might have added a bit there, but you get the point. To wrap this up.
Citation needed.
Right. To wrap this up, because we're going a little long, because I know that we've been on an hour since I got here, and so that's...
The show running long, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's running long, never. Mike put up a post yesterday of an Irvin Santana thing that he made. We'd love your feedback on it at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. We'd love your feedback on anything from the show. I did notice... Mike doesn't like me to talk about the technical issues of the show. I was listening to the show that I wasn't on from last week, and I did notice this on that show and the show before that I was on, that our new recorder that we're using is chopping a little bit, and it's making a sound like we don't take breaths at times. That's not our editing. That's something with the program. There's an update that just came out. See if after next week it continues to do that. So those of you that do email us, please include that in your emails if you're noticing that the feed is still chopping when you listen to it. And maybe it's my player, but I noticed it both when I was editing it and when I listened to it in the car on my phone, that there's a choppiness that comes with it. And again, we've changed recorders, and the recorder we use is free, so we really can't complain about it, but I've noticed that. And so I'm looking, and I'm going to try to get with them and see if they have any feedback on why it would be that way after next week if I notice that it's still doing it. So I just wanted to throw that out there, because I know we have a very smart listening audience, and I want to make sure that you know that we are aware of some of the issues with that. Big shout out to Ben and Audra. They had over 1,000 listens on their last show. I don't know if Kamler's just listening to it in repeat or what's going on, but But that was quite the number for them. We get a lot of, and that's just from, let me clarify that, over 1,000 listens just on the website. Somebody, people taking the time to go to the website, that's not even counting iTunes, because I don't get an accurate number from iTunes, and that was where we get most of our downloads, like most shows do, is they get them through those sourced feeds like iTunes and other places. So congratulations to those guys. I have to say, Ben is by far the best audio editor of any of us that are out here, and I will answer to Lesky and Clint for that as well, because I think the things that Ben does with their show is very creative and very fun, and I'm really, really pleased with my decision to bring him on as the lead for that show, because he is the right guy and he does a very, very good job. So
can he edit this show for us?
Right. Yeah. And I guess he changed his Twitter handle to Ben There Bro, BenThereBro, which I only know because I listen to the show. Nobody even tells me that he uses his Twitter handle from BDN, whatever it was. And I used to complain about it, but I couldn't believe he actually changed it. And I guess he might change it again. So as far as I know, I guess I could check real quick. But as far as I know, that is his current Twitter handle, BenThereBro.
It could also be Bent Here Bro.
No, it's Ben There Bro for right now.
Oh, I know. That's the way he capitalizes it. But
yeah.
I mean, it didn't take long for people to call him Bent instead of Ben.
That actually might be kind of fun.
Bent Here Bro.
Yeah, there you go. So, but he changed his Twitter handle, but absolutely fantastic job. And the other guys at Triple Play Podcast, I haven't been able to listen to their shows as much, but they've done a great job. And Clint and Lesky are just pieces on our staff, and we're so happy to be partners with them on this endeavor to begin with, because Clint has some good cred with the Royals, and what they're going to be able to bring you because of that, it's very good, and Lesky's continued work with the radio stations really helps that, and that's just going to make our whole station better. So we're real excited with the direction they're going. Like I said, hoping on a couple of guests next week. Jeff, any closing thoughts?
No, I think we pretty much hit it all from my standpoint.
Thanks for stepping in to host for me on the first half. I got family in town from Nebraska, so I will attempt to be on every show, but there is chances that I won't. Okay, my mom is in town as I'm getting corrected from behind me. See, even at 33, your mother will still correct you. Don't think it'll be any other way.
Does she embarrass you, Troy?
No, not too bad.
Come on.
We're having a good time, and so depending on how my schedule falls is if I'll be able to be around or not. So I may be in and out until April, but that's okay. Jeff and Mike are the real talent on this show anyway, so I'm just here to kind of keep it all together.
That's
scary. So on that note, Mike, did you have anything else?
No.
Okay. And I'm not taking anything from Audrey either. I better throw that in there, because if I don't, I'm sure I'll hear about it. I'm really pleased. I focus more on the production, because that's the side of it that I mostly work on. And I'm really pleased with a lot of what Ben does. And his stuff cracks, stuff he throws in, is he's just so naturally funny. And that's one thing that the three of us are not necessarily good at, is being naturally funny. That's why we had Gambler on for so long, because he was naturally funny. But Ben,
I strain every time.
Natural about Kamler.
Yeah, that's probably true too. But if you haven't heard Ben and Audra's latest show, it is fantastic. And Ben leads off with this thing about
the Audra intro. You would have to be on Twitter to get it.
Yeah, she hunted a mouse or something. But even without the whole Twitter conversation, which I wasn't part of because I have a job and where I can't get on Twitter, So. I'm not like you other fools that get to be on Twitter all day, or Ben who just gets to stay home. So I can't track much of it, but it was pretty funny. So I definitely encourage you to listen to all the shows, but that one was A++. On that note, listen to all the shows. You can get us on Stitcher, on iTunes. If you go to www.royalspodcast.com, that's a singular podcast, multiple royals, www.royalspodcast.com, you can Get all the information you need. You can get Stitcher, you can get iTunes, everything you need. It's right there. Listen right from the website. It's great work by Clinton on getting that all put together. And on that note, I was going to talk about the Fan Cave, but I'm not going to. Just know that I likely haven't made it. I haven't been notified. We were supposed to be told one way or another 2 weeks ago. There was supposed to be a fan vote. It looks like that's not happening. It looks like they have their people. So I think you're going to find out when the TV show that's going to revolve around it called Off the Bat or whatever debuts on MTV2. But we'll talk more about the Fan Cave. Thank you to everybody that went to voteroyalman.com. You don't need to go anymore. I'll eventually move that to just my YouTube channel, and you're more than welcome to check out my videos. I've got stuff up from Vegas, and I'll probably put up cat videos from time to time, or anything baseball happen to come across, be it isotopes or if I get back down to Phoenix and check out and catch any more there, then we'll take it there. But until next week, for Jeff and Mike, I'm Troy. Have a great week and go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.